The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Now, Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan attended the launch of Rape Crisis Ireland's 2025 report today, highlighting the barriers experienced by survivors with characteristics associated with greater vulnerability. And joining us now is Dr. Cliona Sadleir, Executive Director of Rape Crisis Ireland. Good evening to you, Cliona. I think many of us would be familiar with the barriers that probably all survivors of sexual assault experience, things like stigma, trauma, an adversarial judicial system, things that put them off coming forward. But this report highlights something a little different.
It does. And good afternoon. What we did was we looked at the particular cohort who had one or more compounding barrier. And what we were looking at there and specifically is somebody who has, for example, a disability, is from a minoritized ethnic background, or we measure sexuality, gender identity, or legal status in Ireland. So any one of these categories, if I suppose, sets you apart and makes you different to everyone else. So while you have the same, as you say, those barriers that exist for all survivors, you have these additional ones as well. So we wanted to really dig down into our data and see what it could tell us about their experiences. Okay. So
just for our listeners, legal status, you mean whether or not they're illegal immigrants, asylum seekers, refugee, all of those types of things. Is that
or European or non-Irish? So there's a lot of Europeans, for example. There's some people from the UK, etc. So, you know, and being an Irish citizen, as you can imagine, I mean, this is one of the ones. If you're Irish, you can imagine you have family and friends all around you. You understand the system. If you're coming from perhaps a country in Eastern Europe, you're here, you're working, but you don't have any friends or family around you, and you may not even speak the language very well, and you certainly don't know the system. So these are barriers also.
So you looked at all of these given characteristics of somebody, and tell us what you found.
So for starters, about 33% of the people coming to the 7 rape crisis centres in the Mosaic system, the RCI Mosaic system, had compounding barriers. So that's quite a significant number already. And we also know that to get to a rape crisis centre is itself, someone has gone through as key barriers already. They've already broken through a number of barriers to get to us. So this is just the tip of the iceberg. But one of the things we looked at was reporting rates. So for, if you like, the general survivors within, the total number of survivors within the system, we're looking at about 40% reporting rate. Once these are people in touch with the Rape Crisis Centres, that's not the general population out there. If you look at someone with a compounding barrier, that drops to 35%. If you look at somebody with two compounding barriers, that drops to 15%. So we can see that drop from 40% to 15% reporting to a formal authority. So there's a huge question there in terms of how they're silenced and how they're prevented from, and how they may fear going forward and reporting to the guards, and they simply don't do it.
Okay. And Cliona, I think you were very clear when you were saying about people maybe who had no friends or family in terms of support systems, or maybe had language barriers, etc. So ethnicity and legal status, etc. Understand. Why is it that things like gender identity or sexual orientation or disability also feature as an increased barrier to seeking support?
But I suppose one of the key themes that comes out of this is that piece that we said repeatedly today, is that nobody should have to make a choice between their specific care around their compounding barrier, around their characteristic, around their identity, around their physical needs, and a specialist trauma response, and indeed prevention around sexual violence. So, for example, if you are from an ethnic minority, if you're from a particular group of people that's already being discriminated against, can you speak out about a sexual violence that happened to you? Are you required to make a choice about upholding that group and your community within that group, because it's so beleaguered, if you like, in our society, versus also getting support around sexual violence. So that bit of those survivors are being asked all the time to make choices. And if you look at people with disability in particular, they may well be looking at choices around their care. They may well be in residential settings, for example, and have dependencies on carers, on people all around them. So their choice and their risk, if you like, in speaking out can be quite significant. Okay. And one of the things we're talking about here is we don't necessarily have, if you like, oversight and accountability and independent monitoring of all of those spaces. I think Lisa Michael and Dr. Rosalie McDonough talked as well today about their research into residential care and people with disability. And what you can see is that there really isn't somebody independently going in there and giving those survivors an opportunity to speak out. I think when we did our last piece of research here for people with disability, about 70% of them had never been asked about sexual violence. So there's a part of this that is a legacy piece where we've treated people with disability sexuality as non-existent, and therefore it's simply a taboo subject that we don't speak about. So we never give them the opportunity to be heard, and that renders them vulnerable.
And Cliona, I don't know if this would have been come out in the report or not, but you said that there was quite a high percentage of people who had one or other of these factors that kind of increase their barrier. Is that overrepresentative of the population as a whole? And what I mean by that is, does that mean that we think vulnerable people are more likely to be sexually assaulted?
That's a complicated question. I would say in the first place that is our sample overrepresented? I would expect that it's underrepresented. It aligns. The people coming to us with compounded barriers aligns well enough, closely enough with, if you like, census data. But of course, and we probably should be seeing more of them because, yes, we would expect them to be rendered more vulnerable because we understand how they're isolated. So the fact that they're not getting to us is part of that vulnerability. So while the very fact that they're sort of lined up with the census in a way is itself a kind of going, no, it should be more. So we're looking at 33% at the moment. About 15% have two or more compounding barriers. And a lot of the people coming to us where they have one characteristic, they'll have something else as well. So that's, you know, again, it's just really, really challenging when you put yourself in their shoes.
And very lastly, Cliona, are you calling for anything to be done or what specifically can be done to address this?
Yes, I think so. I think when we look over the last decade of activity around here, we have, if you like, done piecemeal. We've done pieces here and there, and actions and activities here and there. And what we can really see is that, you know, you have to join all that up, because if you have somebody with disability and maybe you've served them well at step one and step two, but there's a gap then to step three, step three is missing, they're never going to get to step four. So it has to be joined up. There's no point, or there's very little point in doing piecemeal pieces. We have to join the whole thing up. So we are asking for a framework, a joined up framework, to be part of the consideration for the next strategic plan for the, because zero tolerance is coming to an end. So the next DSGBV plan is coming up in 2027. So we'd love to see a joined up approach here.
And Cliona, I said that was the last one, but I have one more for you. And I know you may not want to comment on the specifics of any case, but obviously a high profile conviction today for Jeffrey Donaldson, convicted of rape and 18 sexual assault. That kind of thing happening in court, that is a positive for victims and survivors everywhere, isn't it?
It is really encouraging. You've convicted on all counts. And obviously what we're looking at here is, you know, incredibly powerful. You know, the victims who came forward, they had to believe that they would be believed. They had to put that trust in the system. And they went through this whole trial process, all the way up and through the trial process. It's incredible, you know, when we see something like that where, if you like, all the odds or against, because we know that you know, if someone is that powerful in a system, they can keep survivors silenced for very, very many years and perhaps forever. So there's a lot of hope to see here that somebody in that position of power has been challenged in this way and has been convicted.
Look, thank you very much for joining us. That is Dr. Cliona Sadleir, Executive Director of the Rape Crisis Ireland.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
With Kia.
Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.